listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. Before we start the show today, I will remind you that Praxis receives support from Puffin Glass Studios, a purveyor of functional glass art and smoking accessories. 8 locations in the state of Washington. Information available at 509-328-0661 and online at puffinglassstudios.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm going to be talking with a non-traditional audio arrangement on one and a live mic with the other, talking to Satori Butler and Lene Dedmond of the Eastern Washington University Black Student Union about recent activism around the nationwide and worldwide Black Lives Matter campaigns as a response to, you know, ongoing issues, but specifically touched off in Ferguson, Missouri, and then in New York City. Eric Garner. So I don't know which of you would like to introduce yourself first. Maybe we can try Satori because we're doing an odd speakerphone situation. We're going to adjust this mic. So do you want to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about how you got involved as president of the Black Student Union at Eastern?
Okay, well, to start, my name is Satori Butler, and I am a junior standing at Eastern Washington University. I got involved with the Black Student Union my freshman year. I just joined the organization to be involved with other students who look like me on campus and do things that were familiar within my community. And it started from that point. My freshman year, when I got involved with the Black Student Union, I immediately knew that I wanted to engage more, and in order to do that, I got involved more by running for president, and then got elected into office, and this is actually my second term serving as the Black Student Union president. So it has been a very, very great experience thus far, and I'm very happy that I made that decision to do so my freshman year.
Yeah, and are you from the Spokane area, or did you come to Eastern from somewhere completely out of the region?
Oh, no, I'm originally from Seattle, and I moved down to Cheney to go to school from California, so yeah, I'm not originally from the Spokane area.
Yeah, so was it as you expected? Was it, I mean, I guess particularly related to, you said students on campus who look like you were definitely in a very, not the most diverse racially area of the country. Was that kind of a culture shock coming from California and coming from Seattle?
It definitely was a culture shock, but Washington, compared to Seattle, yes, Cheney's not that diverse, but at Eastern, immediately joining the Black Student Union, I was able to connect with more people that looked like me, which is why I found comfort, especially in the Africana program. You're surrounded by a lot of professors, African-American professors, African-American students. It's like a home away from home. So it was a culture shock at the beginning, but because there's an Africana program at the university, it creates a safe environment for students who do feel isolated or who are experiencing that culture shock.
Nice. And how about you, Lene? How did you get into BSU and get involved?
Actually, this is my freshman year, so I am new to the to Eastern Washington and the campus.
Sorry, I have the wrong mic on for you.
Oh.
If you can start over. I'm just
no, you're
I have the phone
fine.
In my hand.
That's fine. I actually am new to Eastern Washington. This is my freshman year. I actually wanted to engage with other students and kind of get out of my comfort zone. And I actually met Satori last spring on campus and really kind of just connected with other students before I started attending Eastern. And so she was actually the one that invited me to BSU initially.
Nice. And so as a freshman, that's cool that you're already
involved
on campus.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you have plans to continue.
Oh, yes. Actually, most definitely. I actually just changed my degree just based on everything that has gone on, I'm changing my degree to government. My original degree was business finance, but I'm very passionate and interested in this field. So
now you're ready to do.
Yes, I definitely want to. Yes, exactly.
All right. So I guess for, I don't know if we want to start with personal or if we want to start with broad, but I know my main, I'm as a person who's not an Eastern student, my main connection to Eastern is through professors that I know. I've interviewed Rachel Dolezal on the show. She's going to be on next week talking about totally different work, but I know she's the advisor of BSU. She's in the Africana Studies program. She's awesome, as we all know.
Yes.
But my main connection point is through the Easterner a lot of the time, and my awareness of a lot of activism on campus came in October when there was a really awful op-ed in the Easterner that was pretty racially ignorant, I think we can say, and there was a huge response. Do you want to talk about that, or was there something before that that was the main like campus touchstone for activism?
We had a protest in response to a piece that was published in the Easterner by a student that I believe was the art director of the Easterner. He published a senior piece in response to the protesting going on in Ferguson. And as I stated before, it was definitely, it wasn't the best opinion piece. And it was very, as an African-American culture, like I felt like it was targeted to disrespect African-American students, not all students on campus, because the Easterner represents Eastern Washington University as a whole. So there were certain statements in the opinion piece that were very ignorant and very disrespectful to the African American community. And students were very disappointed in that it was allowed to be published in the paper, and it just created a tension, racial tension on campus, and we felt the need to speak out against what was allowed to happen at our university, especially a university like Eastern Washington that promotes diversity and equal opportunity for all students, and allowed something like that paper to get out and get published in a newspaper that clearly represents the whole university. So with that being said, we decided to go forth and do a protest and to show, demonstrate to the university and the students that this isn't something that's okay, and that we just aren't going to be quiet about it and deal with it and make it go away, as some people were saying. Some instructors and some students have those opinions. So we definitely did a protest and got a great response. Following the protest, we held a forum November 14th, and we demanded a curriculum reform, and we're getting ready to meet with the president of the university soon to discuss what exactly we are demanding from the university and how we can make the university a better place for students that do come in after we graduate and go forth, you know, just make it a better environment for every student so that everyone can feel welcome in situations that occur don't occur again. So I'm very happy that it happened the way it happened, and the protest was a great success. We definitely got the our faculty and our professors and everyone on campus who grasped their attention, and we're holding on to it. Hopefully Eastern will be making some changes pretty soon.
Yeah, I appreciate that the changes you're looking for are in curriculum, because I read that and my main reaction was, you know, this is the person who's writing it is, I believe, a junior or a senior at Eastern after completing secondary ed, being in higher ed already. And I was just skimming it again and skimming all the great responses to it since then, which is good that those now outnumber this. But he says, you know, what their leaders, meaning the Black community's leaders, call white supremacy, as though it's a made up like thing that they just decided one day to make up this idea of white supremacy to be an adult, you know, in America, and be so shielded from this reality to think it's just this made up thing. Like, that was what really disturbed me.
And the fact that we are in a higher ed, we're in a college. This is college, so we're receiving higher education at this point. We're preparing, our university is supposed to prepare us to go out into the work field. We're getting these degrees so that we can specialize in a specific area. And if we're at a university that embraces diversity, holds diversity to an extremely high standard, but we're not teaching students how to be more diverse, we're not teaching students what diversity really means and what that is. And there's an environmental concern with the lack of intelligence that was displayed in that piece. You can't speak on behalf of a whole community when you know nothing. You disregard the whole historical, our whole history. Like, this is, we didn't make this up. This isn't made up. We don't have this idea in our mind that we're being oppressed and that things, this is just created. No, this is happening, and it's happening now, and the whole nation is at an outcry because of it currently. So the fact that we're at a higher education, I mean, we're in the college right now, and we're not fulfilling that, like, we're not being taught these things is a problem, because we're going to be in the work field with these, the same people that think like the student who wrote that piece. We're going to have to work with them, and then it's going to create tension in the work environment, and it's going to continue to, the cycle is never going to be broken, and this is the perfect time to change that, and I think that's what we need to do. We're requesting that all students are required to take a race and culture studies class, and we're potentially going to push for like a, what's the word for it, like a series, because one class is, we don't believe that one class is just enough. So we're going to try to make it a requirement that they have to take a series, a race and culture series, versus just one class, so that they could actually understand the differences in different cultures, and so people don't have that same mindset. Because there's a lot of individuals at Eastern Washington University that agreed with the opinion piece, and that's what really shocked me more so than anything. Mm-hmm. We just got to witness firsthand what a lot of people feel about the African American community on Eastern's campus. Because there were a ton of things going through Yik Yak afterwards, too. So it was interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So, how, I wonder this, being not in a college environment of any kind, being in like general society, a lot of people who have finished their school, you know, manage to. And when I say people, I mean almost entirely white people, you know, so-called white people, who have been able to coast through their whole experience not asking these questions. Then when a movement, you know, when something like Black Lives Matter emerges and kind of forces the question and says, we're going to talk about this now, the reaction's defensive. Do you both think education's a big part of that? Or how are we going to have a real conversation? What have you seen that's effective so far, either in these last months or further back in history or whenever?
Well, for me personally, education is a huge part of it, because growing, like, even in high school, outside of just a college environment, in high school, a lot that I learned about my own culture, I learned my first year in college, and it blew me away. And I think that a lot of individuals aren't taught the significant part of history. It doesn't stay with them. All we're taught in high school is there was slavery, there was this, there was that. It's not really, it's we're taught only what, we're not taught enough, for lack of a better word. We're not taught enough about our history and about the African American history. And I just feel that the fact that a lot of people don't know creates that, like, they don't have that ability to sympathize, or they don't have that ability to empathize with any situation because they don't really know. So when a situation like this happens, there's always that question, like, oh, well, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, too. We never said that all lives don't matter, but our lives in society right now aren't being, it seems like they don't matter, you know, if they don't matter personally, but a lot of the controversy is over, like, you see a lot of people respond or list, like, all lives matter. Well, are you saying that white lives matter don't matter because black lives matter. We never said that. We're just trying to make a point, get a point across that black males are dying, dropping like flies left to right at the hands of officers and other types of violence, and it's not in the media, it's not being honored. You know, there's no justice coming from it, so we matter, and that's all we're trying to express. And a lot of times you get backlash for that, and you wonder why. Why don't like care, or where's the sympathy? You know, and that I think, me personally, that all comes from the education. No one knows. There's not that education behind it, because if you were well aware, you have that knowledge, you wouldn't be so offended by really what's going on.
To piggyback off of what Satori was saying, it's definitely education, but also something that is very obvious. It is, of course, your background. I definitely had students when all this ensued. I'm in an African-American culture and expressions class, and when we had a lot of the protests and different things, the events that unfolded on campus, I literally had students walk out of class. I mean, so the education is there, but this definitely is an uncomfortable subject for a lot of people. And based on your background, you know, there's the opportunity to learn different things. But if you have a closed mind about different things, or if you feel that this is uncomfortable and I don't want to hear these things, and this is my reality and I don't want to learn anything, there's also that as well. And I've seen that quite a bit as well.
Mm-hmm. That in rare cases, I've been able to use that as a wedge with people who go on the defensive. You know, people, I mean, this is people in my family. This is like a very real thing. And I try to say, you know, like, well, part of what I'm talking about is if you choose to ignore this topic forever, that's not going to affect your life. Like, you're going to be able to ignore it and coast until yes. this is over. And like with a few people, that's been a light bulb moment. But I just think we need to keep at it until yeah. all the light bulbs are on, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, people get in their comfort zones and they don't want to hear anything otherwise. I actually grew up in Tri-Cities, which is I went to school in Pasco, and it's a pretty diverse area as far as like there's a lot of minorities, and we have Russian, African, everybody. And my mom actually worked in the Kennewick School District. I think the racism is a little bit more undercover over there, but my mom definitely experienced discrimination in her job, and she actually was an educator. She's still an educator. She's been a math teacher for the last 35 years, and she worked at the elementary level, and she was the only African-American teacher in the whole Kennewick School District, and was actually had an incident with discrimination and was removed from the school because of that. So it's definitely prevalent. I think, of course, there's different areas where it's a little bit more, like I said, undercover. And, you know, people want to make excuses and know it's this. And if people would just, you know, follow the rules and the guidelines, then we wouldn't have these issues or, you know, and it, you know, of course, like with my mom, it doesn't necessarily matter the education. You know, my mom has her master's degree and has quite a bit of seniority in the school district, and that doesn't matter. So it's definitely something that people definitely need to have that uncomfortable conversation. And, you know, you just kind of try to have the most wisdom and discernment on how to go about that step by step.
Yeah. And I know the only thing I've seen for sure, I know there's a lot of really good from my outside perspective student alliances on campus. I know I saw the Pride Center and Eastern Pride encouraging people to turn out for BSU protests. Has that been like, is the campus environment, have you found it largely supportive? Are there other organizations who are helping out and kind of allying with BSU on this issue?
I definitely think it's we are starting to get quite a bit of support. I think initially when you bring up an issue, you're going to have a lot of resistance and backlash. But I think this is definitely a national thing. And I mean, you can even see protests on TV. We have, what was it, England the other day? I mean, people, this is something that people are very aware of, but again, it's an uncomfortable subject. People don't want to, people are afraid of, you know, stepping out and actually speaking up against things or about different things. This is some issues that have been, you know, some light that has been shed on a lot of issues that have been taking place on Eastern's campus. And I know personally, I've actually had friends who graduated a couple years ago. My sister was a student from Eastern. Just everybody coming up to us, a lot of the BSU members or just people that have been actively involved in the recent situations, congratulating us and thanking us, because it's definitely been a problem for quite some time that nobody wants to speak about, or, you know, it's kind of been one of those things we just don't talk about, that it's not a problem or it's not a big enough problem. So this is definitely, we definitely have received quite a bit of support, high and low.
Cool.
A lot of organizations, just to piggyback off what Lynae said, a lot of organizations have been reaching out to us and have been fully supporting us in many ways. The Pride Center is a huge ally that we have. Mecha is also a huge ally that we have. We also have been working with the Office of Community Engagement. A lot that, of course, the Africana program staff have been helping us out a lot with anything that we have been doing. A lot of campus facilitators have been supporting us, and people even outside of the university. I go to a lot of protests that go on in Spokane that either we organize or we are a part of. People there reach out to me and want to get involved any way that they can. We also had a connection with the Black Student Union at the University of Washington, the Black Student Union at Central, and I believe the Black Student Union at another university that I can't think of off the top of my head, but in Washington. And we all been working in connection to do something really big in the future, pretty soon, actually, hopefully closer to January. But the fact that we're all in solidarity for the same cause, for the same movement, is really inspiring a lot of people. And the fact that we spoke out about an article that was published at our school open the door for a ton of students at different universities to do the same thing. So that small act that of courage, you know, that small act is trying to speak out about what's wrong, is really motivating a lot of people to speak out for the, you know, things that they've been experiencing at these universities that promote diversity, or these universities that embrace diversity and say that they're diverse, they do this, they do that. But the students there don't feel this way, you know, and they're usually quiet about it because they don't have that outlet they don't have that outlet to express these emotions. They don't feel, at least they have the room to say that without being in trouble. So when we had that protest, I think it was, we created a door for a lot of students to walk through. We are definitely making a difference on campus, and we hope to change the dynamic at Eastern. Not that it's a bad school or that the university is not really good. We just want to see that diversity really embraced there. There have been situations where students came to our meeting and spoke about professors asking if their hair is real in front of the whole class, or, you know, just small microaggressions that sometimes professors aren't even aware that they're doing, or, you know, they're not aware. Students, too, they're not aware that some things that they say are offensive, like touching of the hair, or, you know, things, little things like that that are very offensive and hurtful if not addressed in the correct way. And I think that what we're doing is just open that door for people to voice what's going on with them, and creating this whole dynamic of actually getting diversity education and being aware of what's wrong and making it right at Eastern will be amazing. If we could have that happen, it would create a really, really good environment for incoming students, so that they don't have to feel that embarrassment and that isolation that many students that I know have felt there. So I'm excited to see the change come, and we're very thankful for all the help that we have been getting and the support from individuals in Spokane and all the organizations on campus have been in full support. Our turnout for most of the events that have anything to do with Black Lives Matter and this Black Lives Matter, we're keeping it alive because we have the support of individuals helping us do so. So.
Great, yeah. And if you're just joining us on the show, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I'm talking in the studio and also on speakerphone with Satori Butler. I think it's coming through just fine for everyone out there. She's the president of the Black Student Union at Eastern Washington University, and Lene Dedman, who is a member of the BSU and a freshman at Eastern. We've been talking about the campaign nationally, everywhere, as you said, in London, I think. I saw something coming out from Japan, too, mm-hmm. But mostly in the U.S., because that's kind of where the heart of this issue is today about Black Lives Matter. And we mentioned, this is, I'm just curious about your take on this. I'm going to try to phrase it as a question. I'm going to try really hard. You mentioned the response of people saying, well, don't all lives matter? You know, this kind of aggression about that. Another similar thing I've been hearing a lot of is, you know, are we done talking about this yet? Like, this is all people want to talk about. And, you know, it's kind of an expression of people's discomfort with having other people take up space. You know, people who are so used to dominating the narrative and like, oh, well, we talked about racism once today. That was the quota. It's filled. You know, we have one person of color on our board. That's plenty. You know, this kind of attitude. What's your response to that, and how do you think we can push back?
Well, are we done? When I hear, are we done talking about this? I didn't catch I caught most of what you said, but I don't think I understand the question for the fullest because it was in and out. If you don't mind repeating it for me.
No, I'll get my mic closer to the phone. I was just wondering, so people kind of, the attitude from, you know, the dominant culture, which is kind of the white capitalist patriarchal culture, of, you know, we can talk about racism once a day, you know, we already have, you know, one person of color on our board or on our faculty or whatever, this idea that there's a finite amount of space that's allowed. And when you push back and try to take more of that space, what the reaction is, how do you think we can address that?
I just feel like when you hear things like, are we done talking about this yet? Especially with what's going on, it's really, it hurts. Like, it hurts to hear that because we're not just talking about racism. We're not just talking about this because it doesn't exist or it's something that you could just brush off your shoulder and go on. But the fact that people are saying, are we done with this yet? No, we're not done, because probably next week sometime you're going to see another black male that's been murdered by another white police officer for God knows what reason outside the fact that the officer probably feared him and there was a gun that really was never found. There's been so many of these cases, and the fact that people are just saying, are we done? No, we're not done. It's never going to be done until something changes. So when you guys are willing to change the system that's clearly broken, we'll be done complaining about losing lives that matter to us. Mm-hmm. You know, these are families, people's dad. Like, this isn't just something that she could say, are we done yet? We're not just washing our hands, and we're not just going to be done with it until something changes. And it hurts because I'm a mom, and I have a young boy that's going to have to grow up in this world, and that I don't ever want for him to feel anything or feel like he, you know, it's so hard for me to talk about it because when you think about how insensitive and how careless people are, and that just shows you, like, literally what the value of a black life has in this society, you know, and it's really heartbreaking. Honestly, to answer your question, I really don't know how to address it in a way I don't know how to address the question because it just blows my mind that someone can even say that, knowing what's going on, you know, or being aware of every situation that's going on in the world, and people try to justify what's clearly wrong. I mean, in the whole nation, this is nationwide, everyone sees the wrong, and there's certain people that in the world that try to justify it when blows my mind. Lene, maybe you can answer it better. I can't.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of different aspect, definitely what Satori is saying, but I know something that we've kind of talked about in BSU before is the fact that, of course, every generation, these things take on a different form. We went through slavery, and of course, you know, we had people then, you know, that justify it, and of course, we transitioned out of that into the civil rights movement, and, you know, why are you guys still complaining? You know, things are better now, and you look back every generation, even now, of course, we're not in the civil rights movement. Why are these things going on? We're not in slavery. One of the comments that, you know, the gentleman wrote in the article, you know, African Americans have it so good today because we have all these privileges and different things like that. The mentality is still the same. So until that mentality changes, which it's going to take generations, it's definitely going to take, I mean, there's progress, but of course you take a step, you take 15 steps back. It's a lot more subtle nowadays in a lot of situations. And I think that's why people are, you know, we're going to look back at this generation and, oh, okay, I see that, you know, this is what we were doing wrong. And I mean, it's going to continue. So I feel like we have kind of united in that same mentality that we're just going to continue to have that wisdom and discernment on what to do and how to do it and just continue to move and act in, you know, the best and the most respectful way, you know, to promote that change.
Yeah.
And you know what you just made me think of, Lene? It's kind of, when I talk to a lot of people about the situation outside of the Black community, speaking with my family and speaking with some of my friends about the specifically about the Derek Wilson indictment, I remember vividly having a conversation with a close friend of mine, and she said we were all hurt but not surprised, and that comfort, even from African Americans, is what scares me, because being when we're no longer surprised, I mean, we conformed into, for me, this is my opinion, that we conformed into what society is. And having a lot of conversations with different people, I get the same type of response, like, well, what are we going to do? I mean, this is just the way it is. Kind of like, I just throw my hands up, like, this is going to happen again. It's just the way it is. And you think about how many people have that mindset, like you said, that mindset of just, this is the way the world's going to be. This is what I have to settle for. You know, I have to prepare myself to live this way forever because nothing else can change. And I think because we got this far, that there's, you know, the progression, it's not there, that there's no further we can go because this is where we're supposed to be. And I think once that mentality changes, then a lot more can be accomplished. A lot of people don't engage in certain things because I feel that they feel like it's not, a lot's not going to be accomplished. Like speaking in the Black Student Union meeting about protesting and other demonstrations that we planned, a lot of questions are, what is that going to do? We can make all this noise, but what is it going to accomplish? And a lot of things like that are, like, there's that subtle, like, discouragement immediately when you think about when speaking with other African Americans about making a change and what's going on in the world. It's almost immediately like it's shut down because there's that barrier there where it's like, we can fight, we can push, we can fight. People have lost their lives. Martin Luther King was murdered for fighting for us, and we're still here today in 2014. You know, so there's that disconnect. People feel like, you know, it's pointless. What are we going to do? What are we fighting for? What's going to happen? Nothing's going to change. And that mindset is what has to be broken down and rebuilt up. And we have to have that confidence within ourselves. And a lot that, you know, that change can come. It's not going to come overnight. And I think once that mindset is changed, so much more can happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think a big part of it, what's frustrating, and, you know, my only real experience with this is, you know, as a woman, and when we look at, like, issues of feminism, but, like, with that and with racism, with any power structure like that, the people who are receiving the short end of the stick on it, you know, or who are being beat up with the stick, or however you want to put it, are not the people who mostly need to change their behavior. You know, it's mostly the people who are benefiting from the current power system. So the question is, you know, how do you bring the heat to those people in the same way that the people experiencing it are feeling it? And I think that's a question for people working on gender, people working on sexuality, people working on race, class, you know, and all of it is, how do you make it real for other people and get them to change their behavior? Because it's so unfair to say, like, oh, you're being victimized by the system. What are you going to do to change the system you're not in control of? You know,
yeah.
It's kind of a...
Well, I definitely have seen within the community of Spokane, I do respect the program, Center for Justice. I've become very active in a lot of the organizations with them, as well as Satori, and I know Rachel Dozal mm-hmm. has been as well. I definitely feel that one of the points that they had at a Smart Justice Forum a few weeks ago was allies. So there was a community forum about 3 weeks ago where they had judges, police officers, people in law, and definitely willing to listen to the concerns of the community and recognizing, going through the statistics and facts, that this is what's going on. I know one of the statistics that they said was that, you know, Spokane is made up of the black population is 1.8%, and about 56% of Airway Heights prison is African American. So these are real numbers. This is not something that's made up. This is, you know, I may be off a little bit on my on my facts. So I mean it's pretty close to that. But just definitely reaching out to the community, you know, Satori and I, or other students, you know, educating ourselves, getting involved, not just doing the protests, but also you know, being involved in other activist you know, programs or different things where, you know, we are building allies with community members and those that are higher up that can actually do, you know, make that change,
mm-hmm. Hopefully,
that they can hear our voice. Yeah, definitely. And I definitely feel that they are more than willing. I have seen a lot of officials that, you know, let's change these things. This is obviously a real problem. I'm not going to ignore that. And, you know, let's work as a community to figure out our weaknesses and strengths so that we can change that.
Yeah. And a big part of that, I mean, obviously the touch point here with all these, this movement, Black Lives Matter, is police violence, police brutality, systematic, you know, police violence against black men and women, but men at a higher statistical frequency, mass incarceration, all of that. I don't know how, and you just mentioned those stats. I know that the disproportionality is true here, despite the small overall part of the population we're talking about. And what I was going to say, and it's interesting to see, you know, someone like Rachel Dolezal on the Police Ombudsman's Commission, right, doing the oversight.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, I have high hopes that they can do something, or at least point out, like, the extent to which the police system's stacked against all of us, mm-hmm. but more people, some people more than others. Have either of you looked at the police department in Spokane very much, or have you had experience with the police here, with the law?
Unfortunately, I have, and I have a really funny story speaking about the situation in Spokane. What I've experienced out here is that it's definitely unjust. There's a lot of things wrong with the Spokane County, and I'm just going to be completely frank and honest, and I might be a little bit blunt with this part of the conversation, and my words are chose wisely, so there's, but from what I've experienced and from what I've been told, just speaking to different individuals that go through a process in Spokane. Actually, I'm just going to tell a really quick story just to kind of get my point out there. I was involved in a situation my freshman year in college, stupid freshman fight, that me and a different individual got into. And I had to go to court for the situation, and me and the individual both did. And the first charge ever in my life, it was a charge, they tried to charge me for a felony, and a thought three for a mutually engaged conduct. And when I asked why I'm even facing a felony, you know, was given the circumstances of the fight, every lawyer that I spoke with, every attorney that I talked to, were really surprised that I was looking at a felony charge. They were actually blown away. They said things like, what did you do? Did you, for the charge, the felony thing that I was facing, they were like, did you assault an officer? Did you hit a nurse? Did you hit anybody that works, that is employed for the state? I was like, no. It was a mutually engaged combat, and they were all blown away. They're like, wow, yeah, that's a really rare occurrence. That's really odd. I talked to, even the judge was surprised by the charge that I was looking at. And by the grace of God, it was definitely thrown out. But the fact that I was looking at something like so severe over mutually engaged combat, nobody could understand why. And the prosecutor that I even had at the time was, the best deal that they could try to get me to take was they didn't want me to not take the felony. It was like a more.
Oh, we just lost Satori because the battery. Sorry, I thought it said it had more. You were just worried about that. I'm going to call back from my phone and we'll let her finish that. But Lene, while we're waiting to connect, have you had any experience with the law here?
Yes, I actually have as well. Actually, when I've actually only been in Spokane about 2 years. But I moved to Cheney this summer to attend Eastern. And yes, I actually have. And quite similar to Satori, a different situation, but have been told by other officials, you know, within the system.
Hey, we've got you back on.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it was the phone dying. It wasn't you at all.
Okay.
And Lene's just telling me about something similar that she dealt with the police here. And but you can finish, or we can, I don't know. It's a little awkward with the back and forth. But
okay.
Yeah, but this is finished. It was, in short, the situation was definitely strange, and it was a rare occurrence, and everyone that I spoke with felt the same way. Attorneys, lawyers, the judge even felt that the situation was very strange when I spoke with her and chose to go a different way about the decision and disagree with the prosecutor, which turned out to be a blessing for me. But just my experience dealing with that was very scary. It was very scary for the fact that I was not even 21 and not a felony and was told to take nothing but that. It changed my whole whole perception on Spokane County, period. And I still have that perception today. I talked to different individuals who just felt the same way, too, about the system out here. And it's clearly broken. And it's sad that, it's really sad that I had to experience something like that. And I can say firsthand that I had that experience here. And I just really hope that change is coming soon, because it just didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really rare occurrence in my case. It didn't make sense. And I know other individuals that just feel like they just want to accept those charges just to get away from it. But I'm glad that I was strong-minded in the situation and knew that something was wrong with what was being presented to me, and chose to fight against it and not just accept that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
to kind of piggyback again off of Satori, and to kind of quickly finish my story. Yes, I definitely dealt with some similar situations where I actually had public officials tell me the same thing, that is not protocol, or that's not something that they traditionally do. And so it is frustrating and overwhelming. I was just speaking to my sister about this the other day, that I get it. I get the frustration. I get where you see these protests, and I mean, we've barely scratched the surface. We're, of course, in a different community and different area where we have racism and institutionalized racism over here, but it's completely different. We've only scratched the surface, and I get the frustration. I definitely feel that we carry ourselves very well, you know, for the comments of, you know, well, if you don't get yourself in trouble, or if you don't do certain things, then, you know, and cooperating with the officers and different things. And, you know, I've actually had personal encounters where they're actually pretty much criticizing you for reacting in a way that they're not expecting. You know, you kept yourself so composed and, mm-hmm. you know, you did different things like this. And it's very frustrating because they're looking for something. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You can be the most educated person, as I touched on before. You can, you know, have all these things going for you, but somebody can view you in a different light or just have something towards you that, you know, mm-hmm. they want it their way. So, I mean, it is frustrating. And
yeah, and I think we see so much evidence of that in the court system, in our daily lives. Like, we all have, I have the reverse anecdotes of those, you know, of being, it's a, you know, presumption of black guilt, presumption of white innocence stuff mm-hmm. that's like, you know, and it's another, you know, problem with the whole, like, white privilege mentality that this whole system sets up is, like, had I not been engaged at these critical points, like, I could still be coasting along thinking, like, oh, it's so cool that I can get away with anything mm-hmm. with the cops, and they think I'm this sweet, innocent, you know, never getting a critical perspective on that, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. I could just be floating around thinking, like, maybe I am better than everyone
yeah.
else, you know? It's really dangerous for
yeah.
everyone. I mean, yeah. but, you know, is it more dangerous to be killed or is it more dangerous to feel uncomfortable? Like, that's really the question. It's like
exactly.
your discomfort is not equal to someone else's actual suffering.
Exactly. So. And I definitely feel like, personally, my situation, I feel like it was the grace of God definitely calming me down and definitely helping me through the situation. Because, like I said, it is definitely tough to have your life turned upside down and to literally be told by public officials or definitely people involved in your case or different things like that, that this is not protocol. And, you know, they're not even willing to speak up. They are just, you know, in it for the paycheck or different things like that. And they don't really want to say things or speak up about it, and you kind of feel like that situation of you're being punked. I mean, I've literally had to just cry it out, do different things, and, you know, again, the grace of God just giving me that wisdom and discernment, you know, hey, you know, he's going to take care of it. I trust him, and just, you know, you've allowed me to go through this situation for to shed light on, you know, what's going on right now. So I definitely feel that way.
And so we've got just about 5 minutes left, which is shocking, this fast hour. But what's next for the campus, Black Lives Matter in general, and each of you? It's like, where are you going from here?
Well, speaking in reference to the Black Student Union, what we plan to do next is just keep the momentum alive. You know, Black Lives Matter, and they... we're just going to keep that momentum alive. We have a few things coming up. January, we're going to be celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday, and we're going to be doing something in reference to that, and Black History Month right around the corner. So we don't have anything set in stone right at the moment, but we're definitely going to keep the momentum alive, and we're going to stay doing our activism, and we're going to stay in solidarity with Ferguson, in solidarity with the Eric Garner family, and just, we're going to keep it alive all the way and try to make change. Our main focus for the campus is getting that diversity curriculum reform going. We got an appointment when we get back from break to sit down and speak with the president of the university to push for that to happen immediately. We're also pushing for a multicultural center in the university as well, and why the pub remodels, they're trying to get that going. So it's a perfect time for everything to go, get it started at least. And we're just going to keep doing what we have been doing and keep trying to make change. That's the most important part for it. I mean, most important thing is to promote change and try to push for change, make the world a better place. You know, little steps at a time.
Yeah. One thing that I definitely wanted to point out is one thing that I really appreciate about BSU at Eastern and just in general is that we're not really jumping on some sort of bandwagon or, you know, the little campaigns that, you know, some people actually are doing that. But we are definitely have a lot of aspects. We are doing the protesting. We are doing the community building where we are, we have students going out into the other organizations and working with, you know, justices and different things like that to actually make a change, not only on campus, but in the community. And so I definitely appreciate that. We're not just words. We are definitely actions, and we are, definitely in full force. So
So keep watching.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
And for people who want to follow what you're doing, who want to, you know, support from outside campus, I know you have a Facebook page, which is just under EWU Black Student Union. Oh, no, you're good.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we do have a Facebook page, and we update it daily, or anytime we're having any events going on, our Facebook page is simply EWU Black Student Union, or Eastern Washington University Black Student Union, sorry.
Perfect.
Yeah. So.
And I'll put a link to that in the podcast, which should be up later tonight or tomorrow morning. People can find that by going to kyrs.org and clicking on Praxis. They can also find it on Facebook, facebook.com/Praxis Radio, where there's already a link to your Facebook page, and I hope we can connect. Keep that going. Yeah. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Thank you both so much for joining me. Thanks for rolling with the technical logistics.
I think it went well. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. I'll be back next week to talk with Adrian Dominguez and Rachel Dolezal about the Office of Police Ombudsman Commission and overseeing the Spokane Police and working toward independent oversight of Spokane Police. So more to come. And thank you both so much for joining
me. Thank you.
You've been listening to Praxis on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. F Yes is up next.